And we're going to do something a little different tonight. Somebody gave me a new nickname. I think this one's pretty cool. One more, I'm waiting for a call. It should be Tiger Lily.
These four music superstars are competing to find the voice.
I really want to work with you very, very bad.
And they'll choose singers solely on the sound of their voice.
I was dying to see what you look like.
The Voice premieres tonight at 9, 8 Central on NBC.
Hello, Tiger Lily.
Hey.
What's going on? Hold on one second.
All right.
Yeah, I don't have three hands. Bill's not here.
Oh, shoot. Well, I just want to tell you real briefly because I don't have a lot of time, but I'm in Carson City. Did you know that?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, the bill just got a second reading, which is fantastic news. We didn't think it would go that far. So now the legislators have to stay here until all the bills are taken care of. So according to the Senator Gustafson, the senator that introduced the bill for the third time, fifth time out of eight attempts, he said that it's supposed to either go to Finance Committee now before it gets voted on, or he might be able to get an exemption from that because of the late timing and because Senator Helfand has done some really great research on the issue. It's supposed to be, you know, it usually when it goes to the Finance Committee, those are bills that are supposed to go to die, and there's been an overwhelming amount of evidence that if you have helmet choice, you're not going to necessarily be a drooler. But there's been the cost is like in Arizona, it's more expensive if you crash not wearing a helmet with wearing a helmet as opposed to with not wearing a helmet. So it's moving along.
Yeah, it's like that anywhere because I was wearing a helmet, but the highway patrol thought it wasn't the right one I was wearing. Mm-hmm. The doctor told him if I wasn't wearing that one, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you today.
There you
but my accident cost $278,000.
Wow. There you have it. There was a
Hey, I heard you had a nice elevator ride today.
That was so much fun. Oh my God, I was on my game. I looked at that senator eyeball to eyeball because I was falsely accused. And did I also mention about the co-sponsor, Senator Menendo? Oh, by the way, my article came out in the May issue of Quick Throttle Magazine. It's on page 6, and I quoted Jan. Yeah, so it's going to go to the assembly if it gets passed. And I've been so annoying that I bet you if they pass it, it's just because they don't want to ever see my ass here again. But, you know, guess what? I'll be back.
Good.
There's other issues, yeah.
What did Chris have to say?
CD is elated. He just is so excited. He was horrified about, you know, the what happened as far as the slanderous stuff that went on. And not only was I slandered, but my magazine was slandered horribly. Because, you know, our Senate Majority Leader is African-American, and somebody took one of my emails, altered it, and made it appear as though I had called him the N-word. And, oh, my God. And when I called my daughter and told her that, she goes, oh, Mommy, I remember how badly you used to scream at Grandma when she used that N-word. So... yeah, so that's just that I would not do it in a situation like that. Hold on a second. Shoot, I'm getting a phone call. Can I call you right back? Because there's another very interesting development that you may not know about that is really important. So I'll call you right back, okay?
Okay.
Okay, thanks, bye.
Huh? So there we have it. We're getting updates from Nevada. But just so you guys are in the loop, I'll read to you what I got today, what she started talking about the elevator. When she caught the senator in the elevator, the poor guy had no choice but to listen to her with a group of senators in the elevator. She looked him eye to eye to clear her name. She had Terry Hardy, who's the executive director of the World of Soul Motorcycle Club. He would not speak to him on my phone, but fortunately Terry could hear the dialogue in which I explained that if helmet choice is not had in Nevada, his group of some 30,000 riders will take their event elsewhere. She also spoke to Senator Mandindu, I guess. I got the figures from John Johansson in which he lied to me. Mandino said, you are the one that used the racial slurs about Senator Hartsford. I told him it was an altered email and that I have cleared my name. He walked away from me. So I saw Elizabeth Helzit and gave her the stats to Senator Mandino and Senator Dr. Hardy. She said, you got it. I checked and see if Terry Hardy had sent a fax to Hartsford with his letterhead, but Mr. Hardy is an extremely influential leader in Chicago with ties to President Obama's campaign, and he associates with Martin Luther King Jr., Jesse Jackson, and Reverend Wright. If SB 177 passes, it will greatly be attributed to this patriot. He runs his club with the motto, Ride for Hope, Ride for Change. When the dust settles, I will be getting to know him and his organization better. Feel free to tweet, Facebook, or anything else on this. This libel of my name is an extreme negative effect on my name and possibly our magazine. I'm glad I rode up here 550 miles to face these folks and clear my name and help repair the damage that was caused by some thug and then spread by Senator Coping. There are only 2 trusted blank copies of this, so blast away if you see fit, which I've already done. But she's going to call back. Are you back? Tiger Lily. Might not have hung up the phone. All right, you got any? You got time to call in? I wanted to talk to you about this 695 in California. I got an email from Doug. He failed in the committee. Didn't get enough political will to get it past the Assembly Transportation Committee. Okay, I think what we'll do while we wait for Tiger Lily to call back, I'm gonna play Baker's song Ride.
I just told somebody to call to listen in, and his name is Terry Hardy, and he is the executive director of Soul Motorcycle World of Soul Motorcycle Club, and he's out of Chicago.
Did you tell him to call in?
Yeah, I told him to call in. And I gave him the number because he said, how can I get on that blog talk? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I don't have my computer with me, but here's the phone number. So I asked him to call in. And he has been instrumental in engaging Senator Horsford because he is a part of a major event coming to Las Vegas in August, where it's anticipated between 30 and 40,000 motorcyclists, predominantly African Americans, coming to Las Vegas. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Do you know how bad the tyranny is here? It's bad enough that you're African Americans, and then you're gonna, you know, have a novelty helmet or be pulled over because they can't see a sticker or your patch and this stuff, you know. And they're beating the crap out of people here in Las Vegas for video recording. So I'm practicing, and that's, you know, about, you know, my handcuffing experience for 56 minutes. I didn't know how long it was, but I went back and I took a look at the when I called Dave, and when I called Dave, you know, after I got released, and it was 56 minutes that they handcuffed me, and it was all it is just a show of force. So if this bill gets through, Phil, we are going to owe a big debt of gratitude to Mr. Hardy because
the hook right now. Let me bring him in.
Oh, okay.
Hello, caller 773.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you, man?
Pretty good.
Where you at in Chicago?
I'm sorry?
Where are you at in Chicago?
Well, we're on the Great South Side of Chicago.
I grew up at 1315 West Ohio.
Okay, yeah, I'm out here near 95th and the Dan Ryan Expressway.
There you go. Been out there.
Good.
I didn't know that, Phil. Do you know I was born in East Chicago, Indiana, and raised in Gary and East Chicago? Did you know that?
Wow. Small world. It's like the Marine Corps.
Yeah. Well, you know, yeah, not only is that a small world, but I met my husband in Camp Pendleton, and we were both born in the same hospital. And it's funny because he's 15 years older than I am. So I always tell him, so when I was born, you went over to check out the nursery and where you were born, and you say, hey, I'm going to do me that little girl right there. He's like, you're sick, Lillian. You're sick. I know he gets pissed off when he calls me Lillian. I know he's pissed. So, anyways, I just wanted to introduce you to Mr. Hardy. And you, Terry, you need to tell him about the good work, the Right for Hope and Right for Change. And is that what it is, or Right for Change and Right for Hope?
Well, yeah, it's Right for Change, Right for Hope, common mistake. It's not a problem. As long as we fulfill them both, we should be in good shape.
Yeah, and
okay.
you know, it's this whole helmet thing. I was so impressed because initially, Terry was you know, he's like, I'm not really getting the issue. I'm not really getting the connection with the Martin Luther King thing. And we must have talked 4 hours because I'm like, oh, thank God, because I really didn't want to go to Carson City because I got in at midnight and I was freezing and I had all these mishaps and everything. So we talked and the best thing of, well, not the best, but one of the really great things about Terry is that he is an awesome listener, and that's what it's about. And so he wasn't getting, you know, I said to him, you know, you're from Illinois, and would you like to have a helmet law? And what did you tell me, Terry?
Well, no, definitely not.
No. And so then I think I managed to put him into really explain and in great detail and backing up my shit too, you know, giving him some emails and stuff. And this guy, he is, we found a lot of common ground as far as, you know, motorcycle rights and, oh, he's getting into the guerrilla lawfare too, you know.
Uh-huh.
You know about the guerrilla lawfare, right, Phil?
Yes, I do. I'm a member.
Yeah. Yep. There you go. So, hey, Mr. Hardy, I got to run because I got a call coming in, and I got to go back and sit there and pass out. I got three more to pass out for your letters to make sure that these guys get them, the ones that need to vote it. Thanks for all your help, Terry. And I'll see you, Phil.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Bye.
So Terry, if you do you have a pen?
Certainly, I do, Phil.
Okay, it's Sam, Thomas, Robert, Oscar, Kevin, Edward, Ralph, Zebra. 383@gmail.com. If you guys send me whatever flyers or anything you want to put out there, my blog gets anywhere from 25,000 to 35,000 hits a day.
Good.
Right now we're looking. Today I just put it in the chat room, but today we're looking at 29,194.
Where are you situated at, Phil?
I'm in Chicago. I'm in California. I'm in Oceanside. I'm right outside of Camp Pendleton.
Oh, okay, great. You're a Marine?
Yeah, I got stationed here, and the weather was great. We didn't have a helmet law back in the 80s. I stayed.
Oh, good for you. Yeah, really good for you being from Chicago. Outstanding.
Exactly. All my relatives love me. I have room
That's good.
Everybody. But,
tell me about the...
Go ahead.
I was going to ask you to tell me about your experience here with the Bikers' Rights Movement and the helmet law movement.
Well, my experience is it started about 19 years ago on January 1st, but ever since then, in the last 4 years, I'm like I belong to a group called Bikers of Lesser Tolerance. I'm basically the Southern California guy down where I'm at. I'm 38 miles north of San Diego. So about 3.5 years ago, I was coming home from work. I work on the Navy base, and I got off the freeway, and I ride up next to this guy every day for like 3 years. How you doing? You still making that ride from San Diego and stuff? Yeah, absolutely, every day. And then about 3 months go by. It's the Friday before 4th of July, I think. No, it's July 1st because 4th of July was that Monday. He pulls me over, and they proceed to give me a helmet ticket. So when I questioned it and everything, there was no way talking this guy out of it. He's just been a prick the whole time. So about 9 months go by, him and his partner get taken off their bikes. They put him in a car. Now they're downtown walking a beat in Oceanside on second shift. The other two guys who took up the reins after those guys got taken off their bikes started doing the same thing. Well, now the four of them are down there walking a beat at night. So they love me. Then about August of this year, I was downtown. I was riding my bike. They pulled me over again, handcuffed me for my own safety, took all my weapons that they called weapons. And you can we open carry out here. They took that. They took the knife I had in my pocket. I happen to be a VT inspector, and I'm a pipe welder foreman, and I used a hammer to ping the pipe. So the hammer was on top of my saddlebag. They tried to tell me that was a felony. If my name is on it, out here in the books in California, if your name is on it, that makes it personal, then they can arrest you for a felony. But that's kind of how the snowball's been rolling out here. And then I just got everybody else, excuse me, involved in it, where anytime they get pulled over, they start asking for cards or pull out a tape recorder and start recording. Are you there?
Yeah, now you're carrying this helmet. You're carrying this hammer. And you say because the hammer has your personal name on it.
No, if it does, if it has your personal name on it,
then it's
anything
it's
that makes it belong to you personally, it's a felony. Otherwise, you can walk around with a hammer in your hand.
That's interesting.
Yep.
I can't see what's the difference. If it's got your name on it, if it doesn't have your name on it, it's a hammer and it's in your hand. What's the difference?
Right. But the thing is, if your name's on it, that makes it personal. That means you claim ownership.
And what if you've got a nail in the other hand?
Doesn't matter.
Piece of wood sitting right by you?
Doesn't matter. They're cool. Zealous out here, man.
Okay.
Let's put it this way. When I get pulled over, it's not one guy or one car. It's 5 to 6 cars, a sergeant, and what lieutenant's on duty. Because I refuse to give up my rights and answer any questions. As soon as they start talking, I ask for the watch commander.
So you've got the helmet law issue taking place in several cities, several states around the country. What's the situation there in California?
California, as of today, I'll read it to you. I just got the email from one of a good friend of ours. It seems that it's called AB 695. It failed in committee. It failed again. What he says is the bill to repeal California's helmet law, AB 695, failed again this year. While it was a good bill, there wasn't enough political will to get it past the Assembly Transportation Committee. Some folks believe that if the bikers had written more emails, it might have passed. Others may think it was failed because it was a party-line vote. But the plain truth is California bikers don't have enough political power to get the job done, not yet anyway. Sometimes there's a lot of guys that and I'm going to throw this out there, but some guys they're in for the fight until it gets too hot, then they take off. Or they start accusing everybody of being trying to get all the glory. You know?
Get all the glory for what?
Exactly. That's what I've been fighting for almost 20 years with these guys all over the place. Everybody's got their own little group and they think that's the way it should be done. Instead of joining for that's the problem. If we got 50,000 bikers in California today, tomorrow, to take off their helmets, for one day, we'd shut down the court system out here.
Well, if you got 50,000 bikers to call into their senators or send an email or send a fax or stop into their office, you know, you wouldn't have to shut down the expressway. And
everybody
exactly. go about their merry business. And still
the problem is, a lot of people... they walk the walk, but they won't talk the talk when it comes time to, okay, you guys, let's meet at 76 and 5. We're going to ride to Sacramento tomorrow. I guarantee you we maybe have a handful of people. Oh, I couldn't go. My wife didn't want me to go. All that bullshit comes out.
So what is the sentiment in your estimation as to the populace in general, the motorcycle populace, as it relates to health?
They go with the flow. They go with the flow.
So it's do as I'm
for the
told.
Last,
not necessarily as I want.
Exactly. Exactly. Like for the last, I switch up. I wear a beanie helmet, and the beanie helmet that I wear is from the stop that night. They took it for evidence. So now when they pull me over and tell me they want to take it, I just tilt my head down and tell them, read this. Well, how'd you get that back? I went to court. You guys lost. I had seven cops standing to my right in court, and when the judge asked them if they were all ready to proceed, they all said, no, not at this time, Your Honor. So everything was dismissed, and I got all my stuff back.
So when you get on your motorcycle, you've got your helmet there, and you put this helmet on. What are your thoughts?
Why am I wearing this thing?
So you're saying you really don't want to wear it?
Yeah. Sometimes I ride around with just a bandana on.
Okay. Is there sometimes that you really do want to wear it?
It depends. If I got one of my kids or something on the back, yeah, then I wear it. But it's my choice. That's all I want is a choice, to wear it or not.
Sure.
That's
okay.
It.
I can understand that. But you do see some value in wearing it at times.
I'm glad I had it on my head a year and a half ago, yeah.
Yeah.
Or I wouldn't
be
sitting here talking to you.
Yeah, I see some value in wearing it at times, but when it really comes down to I want to have the choice to put it on or not put it on. And,
exactly.
That's the piece that brings us together, and that's the argument that needs to be brought to the forefront within the community prior to any legislative body that understanding be clearly made that you should have the right to make that decision. We've got the National Bikers Roundup coming up in Las Vegas, Nevada, on August the 3rd through the 8th, and I'm sure it's going to be hot as you know what in Las Vegas in the month of August. And just the
and they do a lot of racial profiling over there, man.
Do they really? Okay, well, we get to
they do.
We need to relive some aspects of American society over again that has been brought to our attention. But as it relates to the helmet issue, we are hoping that this can be resolved so that we don't.
Yeah.
So we can have that choice in August when folks that are not accustomed to Arizona weather can get some relief.
Right.
Legally.
That's the thing, you know. I've been places where they had 10,000 bikes, 40,000 bikes, and the cops, they know they're outnumbered, so they really don't do nothing unless you're looking for it. But just riding around here, I mean, I like today when I rode home from work, I got off the freeway, I had a cop follow out of me all the way to my front door.
Can't imagine that.
Just because they got nothing better to do.
Can't imagine it happening. I've never faced anything like that here in Chicago in quite some time. Matter of fact, I don't ever recall anything like that ever happening to me here in Chicago. Maybe in Colorado.
They're too busy over there right now. I heard they're robbing stores and doing burglaries and all kinds of shit.
Times are tough.
Yeah, the cops. Is that true? That's what I read in one of the headlines. A couple of guys got arrested for doing breaking and entering, and then they had those other guys that were robbing all the drug dealers.
Wow. Yeah, times are tough all around, it sounds like.
Yeah. As long as you got a badge and a gun, I guess it's okay to rob people, huh? That's what I feel like when I go out. That's what I feel like when I go out, because right away, as soon as they get out of the car, they got ticket book in hand. And luckily, the last five times, I haven't gotten a ticket.
Yeah, well, we know what the problems are. What are the solutions?
Trying to get everybody together. That's why, you know, you're helping Tiger Lily, and that's great, man. I've been helping out with the blog. I post everything. I talk to people. You know, I'm doing it right now, talking to you.
Well, that's great. That's great. I think that's the best thing that you can do from the very onset of the actual communication of the issues, what they are, identifying them, and having a resolution or reconciliation as the end result, the goal.
Well, that's it. I mean, the goal, you know,
affect change on those issues is also critical, though, and that takes more than just a couple of people. That takes a community to make that happen.
Right. And that's the thing, man. It's trying to, like I said, it's trying to get everybody on the same page. Everybody, sometimes they have their own agendas.
Yeah, we've got an agenda with our project. It actually, Tiger Lily alluded to it earlier, called Ride for Change, Ride for Hope.
Right. If you send me that information, I'll post it for you.
Yeah, I'm going to send you our press release.
Okay.
I'm going to send you our press release, and we hope that folks from California and of the surrounding states near Arizona will also come on out to Las Vegas during the 34th annual National Bikers Roundup and become familiar with the other side of motorcycling, that we all get a chance to get to know each other. Because when it really comes down to it, even on the issue of these helmets and the racial profiling situation and so many other things that are happening in the community, we really need
right.
each other.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, it's like if God forbid six of my fellow Marines got killed in Afghanistan today and you had a bar fight with two bikers, what you think is going to be the headline on the 10 o'clock news?
Bikers tore up the place.
Exactly.
But there's another side of bikers. And that's the side
that needs to
be made manifest. Because when it really comes down to it, you know, we're doctors, lawyers, military persons, teachers, you name it. Everything under the sun. And
right.
Some folks, as you just mentioned, the public perceives us or likens us to dirt. So when it really comes down to it, you know, we can turn that around and fertilize the soil, and with our campaign, Ride for Change, Ride for Hope, and some of the other end results of that campaign and other activities that we get involved in, as to demonstrate that effective grassroots campaigns don't start with the grass or the roots, or they start with the dirt, you know, the very bottom.
The stigma is that we're all big, bad, and we're criminals and all kinds of things. But we're just like regular people, man. We have kids with diseases. We have kids, crippled kids. We have kids, you know, in a wheelchair, all kinds of stuff. We go through the same things everybody else goes through. But people don't see it that way.
Now, you know, one of the things that we're looking at, and you tell me what your thoughts are on this. 30 to 40% of African American males are graduating high school. 30 to 40% of African American males are graduating high school.
Mm-hmm.
And in my estimation, that's not a black issue. That's
not
a white issue.
No, if you got a couple of minutes, I got something I'd like you to listen to. I don't know if you've ever heard this, but go ahead with your thought while I dig this up.
Well, I think that's an American issue, because when it really comes down to it, you know, what is our country going to look like 5 to 10 years down the line if that trend does not reverse?
Right.
We've got to enable all aspects of our population to be productive. And so
right.
we're encouraging folks to get engaged in this conversation, as well as the conversation on helmet laws and racial profiling. It all really stems down to education across the board. So if we are focusing on education, and as the bottom comes up, all of America comes up, everybody has to elevate their mindset, because the focus is not just on me now, it's on us. What can we do? And we
right.
really got to get up off of each other's back when it comes down to it.
Well, we got to join forces.
Yeah,
we got to join
forces. No doubt. Now, I am personally a Barack Obama fan for several reasons. But for the most part, one of the things that Barack Obama mentioned that I'd like to bring to the forefront the night that was elected,
you
mentioned that the work doesn't stop here with my election, but we've got to continue to have dialogue on issues that matter. You've heard me say that before already, organizing and mobilizing to affect change in our communities. That is a profound statement because we don't talk to each other.
Right.
We don't talk to each other. And if communication is the cornerstone of all change and we're not talking to each other, that means we've got stagnation. Stagnation breeds communal frustration. So here we are as a nation frustrated with each other because we're not communicating, first of all.
Exactly.
On issues that matter.
Exactly. You know, Obama was here last week, and they shut down a couple of the freeways during rush hour. Made everybody real happy. They were interviewing people saying all kinds of stupid shit. But I found that thing, and I don't know if you ever heard this, but it's by Charlton Heston. And I'm going to play it, but this is something they need to show this in schools. And what this is Charlton Heston discussing the passing on of the legacy of the Second Amendment. So let me pop this in, and then we'll come right back after that, okay?
Let's hear it. Yeah, I'll be here.
Okay.
Believe in the Second Amendment to the Constitution, right? I mean, you consider yourself a keeper of the flame, and you intend to pass that torch on to the next generation of Americans. So tell me, if you could see into the next century and know whether the Second Amendment is still intact or in shambles, would you look? If someone could predict the outcome a half a hundred years from now of all your conviction and commitment and hard work, would you listen? Well, you can.
What guarantees me freedom? Oh, that's a hard question. What is the Constitution? I don't know. Gives me freedom? I don't know.
Will they be the keepers of the flame?
No, I do not think everybody should have a right to own a gun.
What is the Constitution? I don't know.
Guns, in general, are very bad.
What is the Constitution? I don't know. What's the Constitution? I don't know.
Will they carry the torch?
I have no idea what the Second Amendment is.
An amendment is...
Oh, I know what the Second Amendment is.
Let me think. What is the Second Amendment?
You got me there. I don't know. What's the Second Amendment? I don't know.
Do you believe what you're hearing? Well, actually, I do. There's a lot of fundamental facts about the United States that many people are not aware of.
Exactly. And these are 9 and 10-year-old kids. Let me go back to it.
I don't know.
Something's gone wrong. For all our vigilance and battle scars over the Bill of Rights, have we let the flame of freedom's torch grow cold? Because there can be no torch to pass where there's no flame. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The Second Amendment. Textbooks ignore it, schools teach against it, clergy preach against it, politicians legislate against it, media ridicule it, movies pervert it, courts avoid it, and too many gun owners permit it. So it's not unreasonable that with one lost generation, we could lose the Second Amendment forever. Because we didn't teach them what the battle's all about. We didn't strike that spark in their hearts that lights the fire for freedom. So why does that belief burn so brightly in you and me? Our core beliefs are the work of all the men and women of our childhoods. A constellation of people who orbited around us, tugging here, pushing there, day after day as we grew, shaping our beliefs, carving our characters until we became who we are. You remember them? Parents who didn't just talk about values, but who lived out those values. The gym coach whose knotted rope taught you to pull your own weight. The scoutmaster who surely had a job and a family to tend to, but always made time for you. Clergyman whose moral compass helped guide your way. The grocery store owner who played along with mom in an unscripted scolding that ended your candy pilfering days forever. The principal whose handmade paddle was somehow comforting. It meant punishment was certain. So was forgiveness. The neighborhood teenager who bragged about joining the army, but whose silence after the war taught you even more. The teacher who stood up for the weak and stared down the bully. The neighborhood policeman who didn't just know the law, he knew everything you were thinking. That stranger you watched at the football game during the national anthem unknowingly guided your hand over your heart. And that woman by him, her eyes fixed in the flag, taught you patriotism isn't just for guys. All those people, they gave you a sense of geography about your life, where you fit in, right and wrong. Each of us is a tapestry of threads woven by all of them. They understood their part in the pattern, personal responsibility, freedom, honesty, justice, the Bill of Rights. That is the living torch they passed to us. Imagine if every kid had learned what we learned, that without a Second Amendment, by what means could a free people expect to protect freedom? We learned that. History proves it. Common sense confirms it, and any school kid can grasp it. Only people who are free to own firearms can remain free people. If every kid could just learn that a gun is a thing to be handled with care and respect. Yes, honor. Because beneath all the trappings of hobby and camaraderie and sport, a firearm is the fundamental symbol of our freedom. Because a firearm gives the most common of common men the most simple and supreme right to pursue life and liberty and happiness in accordance with and under the protection of the law. That's why the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. That is the passion we must ignite in those who follow. All of us who feel that surge of pride, who chill at the genuine glory of a free people able to protect their own freedom. So what are we doing about it? Yes, we can blame violent crime or Sarah Brady or the media or bullet-riddled movies, and certainly some blame is due. But what effort has our generation spent to make sure the next generation feels as deeply as we do? If we focus on anti-gun legislation but ignore an anti-gun generation, if we spend years as pro-gun activists but only minutes as pro-gun mentors, if we've earned the support of this generation of office holders, but not the next generation of voters, we will have failed. We must tell it, teach it, live it, breathe it. Every one of us born beneath this blessed American sky has rights nobody can take away, because no one gave them to us. They were ours from the beginning. Each of us has a birth certificate, but it didn't give us life. It just put on paper what everybody already knows. We are alive. In the same way, the Constitution didn't give us rights. It just put on paper what everybody already knows. We're free to say and write and think and work and worship as we choose. We're free to own a firearm, and that right shall not be infringed. If you consider yourself a freedom-loving patriot, you can't shirk your duty to teach America's young to understand the Second Amendment, to revere it, to embrace it, to defend it, and in their turn, to bequeath it. That's what we have to do. We, the teachers, the neighbors, the clergy, the uncles, the grocers, the legislators, the scoutmasters, the parents, the Americans. Only then can we pass the torch with that sacred flame that lights the American way.
How do you feel about that? How you feel about that, Mr. Hardy? Hello? And we might have lost him. Are you there? Hello, caller. We can ring him up.
Greetings.
Hello, I lost you.
Okay, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay,
I lost
great.
You on the screen.
Yeah. Not a problem, not a problem. Yeah, I was listening to that, the Second Amendment.
Uh-huh.
Right to bear arms.
Also, but what it is the last part is where he said we have to get everybody involved and everybody to spread the word because we're losing our rights left and right. Like I said earlier, I'd rather have the choice not to be told what to do, but my choice to make that choice.
Yeah, I think it's a control issue, man. A lot of what we have here in this country is based on propaganda anyway, so it's easy to take away your rights if you don't know what the rights are.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's how you carry
exactly.
propaganda.
Exactly. It's trying to, you know, I'm sure you have a lot of young riders in your group, and Have you taken a survey to see how they feel about this, going to Vegas and getting hassled?
Well, you know, there's been some conversation about what's acceptable there in Vegas as far as getting hassled. It hasn't really been a topic. You know, I've never had a problem being in Vegas, and never had an encounter with the police department. It doesn't mean that it's not likely to happen. But
yeah,
we hope that if
first...
it does happen, we're all equipped to deal with those things. And that's one of the great reasons I had the opportunity to speak with Dave earlier today with, what's the name of Dave's organization he started a couple of years ago? Dealing with
Guerrilla Lawfare?
Being detained. Guerrilla Lawfare, right.
Yep.
Right. Yeah, it's a really good information. I mean, that information sounds like a must. I mean, that'd be a great seminar.
Yeah. Yeah, Dave's a pretty sharp guy.
When encountered, yeah, we talked at length. I'm surprised I forgot his name of his his organization. But he's got some good information. And he's helped me to appreciate about the open carry situation there in Las Vegas. And we just hope that by means of his work that things are able to change and the police do the right thing. And based on what he's been telling me, you know, they have made a lot of adjustments as a result of some of the things that he's
brought. Yeah, he made him put signs up and everything so you can't walk in carrying a gun now.
But
he walks in anyway.
The sign, you said?
No, they put him up. They didn't have any signs up when he first went in.
Oh, okay.
Now they have signs up.
Hmm.
Have you seen the videos?
No, I haven't seen the videos.
You can get to him on Guerrilla Lawfare, but yeah, if you go to that site, you can get to him. It's pretty wild. The same thing with Tiger Lily's encounter with the two rent-a-cops. They handcuffed her for 56 minutes. They're out of control, man. All over. To me, they're like the guy who got picked on in school and now he has a badge and a gun, so he can do what he wants.
If they're out of control all over, what do you attribute that to?
The little big man syndrome. I'm in control and you're going to do what I tell you. My problem is I tell them, no, I'm not. The guys out here, I know a lot of them were Marines, a lot of them were in the Navy. And they're cops here now, and they just—it's like a 180. They just turn their back on everybody, and they feel that they're bigger than life, and you got to do what they tell you. I mean, a friend of mine. Okay, picture this: there's 10 guys standing in front of the bar. There's 10 Harleys parked at the curb. They're all backed in, all on the kickstands. They're all facing to the left. One guy walks and starts up his bike. He lets it run. It's 30 degrees the day after Thanksgiving on a Friday night, about 12:30. He starts the bike. He lets it warm up. He walks back over to talk to everybody. Across the street in the alley is this woman cop that always hassles everybody. She lets him get on his bike and leave. Gets on the radio and has somebody stop him 2.5 miles down to go give him a ticket because she thought it was a safety issue at that point. Tried to write him up for speeding, wrote him up for not having turn signals on his bike, and gave him a ticket for leaving his bike unattended while it was running. He was 5 feet from it. So when they went to court on the 30th of March, it's on tape. They caught her in a lie. She said she was the one that pulled him over. She's the one that wrote all the tickets, da-da-da-da. It came out that she wasn't the one that did it. The other guy pulled her over for her and then proceeded to write all the tickets. But everything got dismissed because the commission out here, we don't have a judge unless you request one, and then it's a long process to get to him. But it was a commissioner who happened to ride and said he starts his bike and lets it warm up too. But think about this. They pull you over. They get out of the car. They ask you to get out of your car or walk to the back. You're standing there. Your car's off. Whose car is running?
I think they're
there. Huh?
Say that again?
They leave theirs running. Unattended. But they'll give you a ticket for it.
Ooh.
That's how they are out here, man. And when he called me and that happened, he called me and told me, and I walked over and I talked to a sergeant who was a friend of mine downtown. He called and had two people look it up for almost 2 hours, and they couldn't find it, and finally they found it. And it says nothing about a motorcycle. It says cars only. So I guess now when you start your bike, you're going to have to sit on it until you're ready to go. I usually start mine, wipe off the dew so I can sit in the seat, and then I go. But it depends on where you're at and what's going on. But tell us some more. Tell me a little bit more about your group, man. What did they do, and how did they get started and stuff?
Well, you know, once again, you know, Right for Change, Right for Hope, 2008, Barack Obama's campaign.
Uh-huh.
African-American here in the city of Chicago. I had come off the tail end of being the state logistics director for the MLKM5 project, which was a national fundraising effort to raise money for Dr. King's memorial in Washington, D.C., and on the grounds where we were handing those funds over, by the way, we raised $100,000 for Dr. King's memorial. And on the grounds where we were to hand those funds over to the Memorial Foundation is actually where the memorial is scheduled to be built. Well, actually, it has been built now. I think the opening is going to be in August. But it was on that grounds that we notified the nation of our latest project, which was Bikers for Obama.
Uh-huh.
Life for Change, Life for Hope. And the whole objective was to encourage folks to register to vote. Not only to register to vote, but to cast your vote on election day. You know, our numbers are typically low at the polls, African Americans, that is, and we wanted to change that. We wanted to educate people about being engaged in the process. You know, we're African Americans, but then again, we're not Americans if we're not participating in the process that makes people American. So we did that.
Do you know anything about Australia? Have you heard anything about Australia at all?
Just the down under terminology.
That's it, huh? Okay.
Yeah, that's just about it.
Okay. I'm gonna play something for you. I want you to listen to this because this guy's talking from the heart about every biker in Australia. Okay? His name is Ferret. He's from the United Motorcycle Council of New South Wales. But check this guy out, what he's got to say.
Good afternoon. My name's Ferret. I work in a tattoo parlor in the western suburbs of Sydney. I'm a father of two, a grandfather of five. I've been a member of the Finks Motorcycle Club for 22 years, and it's as much a part of who I am as being a father or a grandfather. It's where I've met my best friends, spent some of the milestones of my life, and found people who share my lifelong interest in motorcycles. Contrary to what you may hear from government press releases, being a Fink doesn't mean that I must be involved in drug trafficking, violence, intimidation, or any other form of crime. Organising it, participating in it, or condoning it. But that's me. I'm not here to tell you members of motorcycle clubs are all saints. There may be people amongst their members who've been in trouble, and what happened at Sydney Airport was a tragedy. Hopefully, with the clubs now sitting together on the United Motorcycle Council, communication between clubs can be improved to alleviate any further tension. My message to you today is that the behaviour of the few does not give our state governments the right to punish the majority. It does not give the government or the police the right to apply a different legal standard to people who look like me or belong to my club. Most of all, it does not make it right for the government to pass laws that lead to innocent people losing their jobs. But that's exactly what's happening. About 2 weeks ago, a member of a Christian motorcycle club in New South Wales was told to stop associating with people in the United Motorcycle Council or lose his public service job. My message today, the people living in Australia should be free to lawfully associate. Our existing laws are sufficient to punish crime and corruption. There's no need in this country for a law that says any citizen can lose their livelihood and be declared a criminal. Simply.
You get where he's going with this?
Yeah.
Guilt by association.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Well.
Okay.
We
I'm going to let him finish.
Commonality, man.
Exactly. Dude, but this guy's on the right track. Listen to what he has to say.
That's by talking to someone else. The behavior of the few does not justify punishing or taking away the rights of the whole. Think about it this way. If the behavior of a few was enough to justify a criminal tag being applied to all, then Anna Bligh up in Queensland should be declaring her own party a criminal organisation. And our Prime Minister, Kevin Rudd, would also be guilty because his party has accepted donations from an individual named by a US Senate as having associates involved in organised crime. As I said, I'm not trying to say all bikers are saints, just like not all politicians or police are squeaky clean. But I would say that there is more organised criminal activity every day in Australia's governments and police services than you would ever find at your local biker clubhouse. I'm honoured to be here today representing the 18 clubs of the UMC of New South Wales and speaking on their behalf. There are two things I'd like to achieve from this event. Firstly, I'm going to ask you, the members of the media and government, to write and speak fairly about us and our members. And I'm going to ask you to apply a healthy degree of scepticism to what you hear coming out of the government about bikers and crime. Secondly, I'm going to challenge the media to apply these laws, the same laws of scrutiny and the same concern for human rights that were applied in this country to the previous government's anti-terror laws. These anti-association laws are continuing the job the previous government started stripping away our legal rights. Now, firstly, about the media. You may have noticed we don't comment on what's written about us. We rarely tell our side of the story. What you think about motorcycle clubs, you probably assume from the way we look, what you've read about in the news, seen in biker movies, or been told by the government or police. I guess you could say that the way we've been portrayed over the years isn't something we've fought against. What this means is that what's said about us has gone uncontested. Many of you may argue that you think the bikers deserve whatever bad publicity we get. However, something we've been looking at pretty closely lately is the fact that there's a double standard from government about the way information released about bikers is treated. And one of my key reasons to talk to you today is to ask you, members of the media, to be aware of how the government talks about us and to be less accepting of what they give you as fact. To give you an example, we've all heard recently about TV actress Jodie Gordon being found with an alleged Rebels biker. This story took a life of its own as it was reported and re-reported as fact by media around the country. The fact is, the guy in the story is not a biker. He's never been a member of the Rebels or any other club. However, at some point, he has had friends in a motorcycle club or within a motorcycle. As a result of this, bikers get the credit for the behaviour of some TV star we haven't even met. Let me give you another example. The Daily Telegraph, Tuesday, July the 14th. Headline: Mikey Link to Law Chief. We'll have a look and discover. It's about a convicted drug criminal worked undetected for 4 years in the state government's highest law office after changing a name. So this sounds serious. We'll look for the link. On the front page, we don't discover anything about bikers. So we go to page 4. Oops. So we go to look. It then mentions the Attorney General. He's not a biker, but he's not in the fix. Then it mentions the Premier. He's not a biker. And with his popularity, he probably wouldn't get in anyway. So where's the biker link? So then it mentions the woman's boyfriend. Surprise, surprise. He's not a biker. Then we go to the brother. Another surprise. Not a biker either. But we find that he was, in newspaper speak, allegedly linked to a motorcycle club. So hang on. The headline, Biker Link to Law Chief, is actually so far from a real link to the Attorney General, it's ridiculous. Does anyone here in this room know the game 6 degrees of separation? I'm pretty sure that if I tried hard enough, I could find, from within my friends, relatives, people I've once met at the gym, a chain of people that would lead me to some very interesting, influential people. But does it mean I know them? So I asked around. And someone who works with me now, as an associate, is a former employee of Kevin Rudd. Therefore, Prime Minister... I bet you didn't know this. But there is a faint link directly to your office in Parliament House. It's the same distance of connection of the alleged link to the story in the Daily Telegraph. Of course. Do I know Kevin Rudd? No. Have I met Kevin Rudd? No. Do I have any influence over Kevin Rudd? No. Would it be a complete beat up for any of you to publish a headline tomorrow? Think link to PM. Yes, it would. What I would like tomorrow's headline to focus on is the very real threat to civil liberties from the anti-association laws being introduced by most state governments. I'm not going to get into a lot of detail about the laws, as you'll soon hear from one of Australia's leading criminologists on what that will mean for every Australian citizen. But I do want to challenge the media to apply more scrutiny to these laws. A few years ago, when the former federal government proposed some very serious laws to deal with terrorism, there was a national outcry about the impact they would have on civil and legal rights. Speakers in this very room denounced the unjust aspects of those laws, and journalists across the country wrote large volumes about their impacts on basic legal rights. Due to that public scrutiny, many of the harshest and most unjust elements of those laws were removed or watered down. As we've seen in the last 24 hours, that doesn't seem to have affected the ability to combat terrorism. It's ironic that much of the criticism of the anti-terror laws came from state governments, most of whom are now passing equally bad laws at the state level. What's worse is that because governments claim the laws are targeted only at bikers, they're going almost unreported by the media. But these laws do not only affect bikers. In fact, the New South Wales legislation doesn't even contain the words biker or motorcycle club. These laws strip away fundamental legal rights, such as freedom of association, the presumption of innocence, open court hearings, and the right of appeal. And then they can be used against any group or individual. I challenge the media, both here today and around Australia, to look far more seriously at these laws. Apply the same level of scrutiny you apply to the anti-terror laws, because the impact on human rights is just as bad. I might be just one person, and just a dad from Western Sydney, but I'm telling you today, it's not just about me, or even about people who ride motorcycles. It's an issue about human rights. It's an issue for every person listening to me here, in the press gallery, and at home across Australia. Don't just believe me. Find out for yourself. Read the legislation. You'll soon see what our governments are doing to us is a lot more scary than a few guys with tattoos and leather jackets. Thank you.
What do you think of that?
Well, I think you got some valid points, and it was good to hear it articulated. I mean, those points are pretty much universal as it relates
right.
to the issues that bikers face.
Right, because whatever happens on the East Coast is going to happen on the West Coast tomorrow. Right after,
really
about a year after this, California came up with what they call the California Step Act. Now, if me, you, and Tiger Lily were standing on the corner, and say we were all wearing your club T-shirt, we're now a criminal organization because that cop decided we were criminals. That's where it's at right here in Cali, man.
Yeah.
If three guys were standing with any club shirt on, okay, put it that way, any club shirt on, three guys are standing there, now you three guys just got pegged. And anybody you talk to is going to get pegged. Anybody you bullshit with is going to get pegged as an associate of that club. Because one cop decided you guys were a criminal organization. And all it takes is that guy to write something down, turn it in, and that's when the investigation starts. That's how it is out here.
How do you combat that? How do you counter that?
With IA complaints?
That's the problem. What's the solution?
With IA complaints and tap dancing on the guy's desk. I do it all the time. If people get pulled over and the guy's nice as pie or whatever, I still tell him, get his business card and you're going to fill out an IA complaint. Oh, but he was nice to me. Doesn't matter. He impeded you from going to where you were going. If they pull me over and ask me where I'm going to point A. Where are you coming from? Point B. You're not going to give me a straight answer? I don't have to give you a straight answer. I have the right to travel freely.
Then you talk about education once again. So if these things
exactly.
take place and more people are able to respond accordingly, then that would have to stop. I mean, there would be no need for an officer to continue if he knows that folks are going to respond a certain way. And I think education is the key to a lot of the issues that are plaguing our communities around the country, regardless if it's just biking or anything else. Everything stems from education.
Right, and they're trying to what they're doing in Australia, they already started doing in Canada, and if you notice the news, if you go on my blog, you can read it. They're doing it in New Zealand too. New Zealand just picked up on it. They're starting to do it. Germany's been doing it for a while, but it's heading everywhere. I think the only thing that's stopping them from doing it here is the Bill of Rights, basically. Because I like Art says in the chat room here, biker rights are basic American rights.
And don't bikers represent America as a whole? From the very
Absolutely.
Best to the very worst of us.
Absolutely.
I see a new day ahead as more folks begin to emerge, such as Dave and his program, your radio show, and what you're bringing to the table now. Well, you have more voices emerging on issues significant to the community, and usually where there's a dialogue, there's action to follow. So you know, you rise the voice on one level, and you suppress the oppressor on the other side with the action. So. We just got to keep
right.
moving.
I mean, right now.
Keep moving, keep the information going.
Yeah, because right now our audience in the United States is 93,538. We have 456 people listening in Brazil. We got 1,372 in Canada. Germany, we got 1,197. Australia, we got 1,289. Russia, we have 128. New Zealand, we have 1,122. In England, we have 1,295. Denmark, we have 1,183. And in South Africa, we have 35 people listening right now.
Right now?
Right now.
It's a good audience.
Not bad for a schmuck who's a pipe welder. Denmark.
You know, we've got
120 people listening in Iran.
That's impressive. Well,
yeah,
that's impressive.
I mean,
that's impressive. So
that's why I said, you know, we get anywhere from 25 to 35,000 hits a day on the blog. So anything you want to put out there, It goes worldwide.
Okay, well, great. I'm definitely going to send over our press release regarding Life for Change, Life for Hope. Because what we're talking about is, as it relates to change and hope, you know, that's not a black thing. It's not a white thing. It's not even just an American thing. That's actually a worldwide movement right there.
Yeah.
Because when you think about just the issue of,
you can see it happening in the Asian country. I mean, you can see it happening you can see it happening all over the world because everybody's getting tired of the bullshit and they're fighting back. That's the way it should be.
Phil, you know, the first issue that we dealt with, every year we have a different theme with the Ride for Change, Ride for Hope. And the first year outside of Chicago, we took the campaign to Atlanta, Georgia. And we partnered with the King family there, where I was able to lay a wreath at Dr. King's place of rest and give a presentation to the motorcycle community alongside Dr. King's nephew, Isaac Ferris, who was then the president and CEO of the King Center. On that issue of violence, we had an opportunity to sit down at the table with a member of the King family and talk about that, what violence really is. And when it really comes down to it, it boils down to the fact that, you know, violence isn't what we think it is. It's not the beating, the shooting, or the stabbing. It's all that shit that leads up to it, excuse my expression. It's the way we're interacting with each other. Anytime you decrease one's ability to increase their capacity to fully develop, that's an act of violence. When you're restricting one's movement, that's an act of violence. Because the Creator gave them that movement, gave them that right to flow here, back and forth.
Right.
And when someone attempts to restrict that, that is an act of violence. So many things.
That's true.
The
prejudice that
bikers face, you know, from the general public is an act of violence. And on the other hand, we just got
I got a ponytail. After I got out of the Marine Corps, I stopped cutting my hair. I got a ponytail down the middle of my back. I wear a bandana, and I either wear a club shirt or a Harley shirt, and I go to work, and I get prejudiced because I'm a biker. It's like right now I work for a company, it's called General Dynamics, and we're building it's a replenishment ship right now. It's gonna be given to the Marine Corps, but right now the ship is called the Medgar Evers. That's who the ship is. We're going to have his family and stuff there, but that's who the ship's being built for.
Outstanding. The Medgar Evers.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. And then I forget the name of that guy. He was a deep sea diver, but he was the first black diver. I don't remember, but we built the ship for him too. And then there was another doctor who invented something. That doctor who invented, the hell was it? I forget. But he got in a car accident and they wouldn't give him blood because it was in a.
That's Charles Drew.
There you go.
That's Charles Drew.
Yeah, we built the Charles Drew too.
Well, there's a lot of history there, and that's really good to hear that those folks are being recognized for their contributions and America's.
Yeah, I had when we did that one for the diver. They made that movie. They had Cuba Gooding, his wife, was having a baby that day, but De Niro and everybody that was involved in that movie was down there to christen the ship.
Good. So where do we go from here with some of the issues that we've talked about and some of the problems that we've identified?
Where do we go? The guy's name was Carl Brush. It was Carl Brashear is his name, the diver. But where do we go from here? We just march on. I mean, people are catching on. People are talking. You know, that's what we need to do is stir the movement.
Well, we've got some knocking on the door and in Las Vegas. Well, not Las Vegas, but Carson City, Nevada. And I'm really anxious to find out. Where the movement is there in the Senate as it relates to Senate Bill 177 to repeal the helmet law there. So I'm really anxious to find out how that's going on, how that's coming along.
Yeah, we'll find out. We'll find out tomorrow. But I'm going to try and call Tiger Lily later for an update.
Now, how long?
But yeah,
the
only way we can do this is by spreading the word, man. Learning and fighting. You know, I learned how to use their laws against them. And these guys here in town, they don't like it. Because I'll tell you a story. They went into the bar. There's a bar where everybody hangs out at. I don't drink. I haven't had a drink since 1985. But a lieutenant went in there the next day after I left. They went in there and asked everybody who I was, where I came from. And I've been in this town for 25 years, almost 30. Yeah, almost 30 years. And this woman who's a lieutenant now used to bring my teenage daughters home when she was a patrolman instead of arresting them or taking them to jail. And she forgot all that until I called and asked her why she was asking questions about me at the bar. I'm on my way from San Diego. Can I meet you before you leave the station? And I sat with her for 2 hours and talked about all this. And things changed for a little bit. It took about 4 months, 6 hours, and 11 minutes before they started doing all the bullshit again. That's how anal I got on keeping track of everything that they do.
Oh.
And now most of the guys, when they see me, they just wave at me. Even whether I'm wearing a helmet or not, they just wave at me and go the other way. It's that 10 or 15% of the young guys that think I'm just an older guy with a chip on my shoulder. And I'm not. I'm fighting for my rights. I'm making it safer for the bikers that come into town here to enjoy themselves instead of getting hassled as soon as they get off the freeway.
Now, let me ask you something. I'm new to all this.
Uh-huh.
let me play that card. It appears to me that bikers' rights is synonymous with gun rights. Why is that?
Because it's a choice to be free. It's a choice to let you do what you want to do, what you enjoy. All right, let me put it to you this way. It's about 75 degrees. You're on the Dan Ryan. You live by the Dan Ryan, right?
I'm two blocks away, baby.
Okay. Now, it's Monday morning. It's 75 degrees out. The sun's out. The birds are chirping. It's a beautiful day. But you know your boss told you if you take one more day off, I'm going to have to do something. But you walk outside and you're looking at the bike. You're looking at the weather. What choice do you make? And I'll tell you the choices,
man.
I make when after I hear your answer.
Man, I'm thinking what I'm going to put on because I'm riding that bike.
Exactly. It's just like me. When I go to work at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning. I enjoy my ride to work. A couple of weeks ago, I got to the border. It said you are now leaving the United States. I kept going. I went down to Ensenada, Mexico, and had breakfast. I didn't show up for work till about 11:45. Hey, you never where you been, man? You never miss a day. You're always here. I just had something to do. I didn't have to tell him what I did because it would have, that guy, he didn't come to work because he wanted to go for a bike ride. I didn't want that bullshit starting, but everybody's going to know now because most of the guys at work listen to the show. But I just decided when I seen that sign that said you are now leaving the United States, I kept going. Because I have that choice to make. That's the way I live my life. I make the choices that I do for the things that I want to do and how I want to do them. I could get on my bike and go downtown after the show tonight and go for a ride and end up downtown and do what I like to do. Get off my bike. I walk down to the coffee shop. I buy a cup of coffee. I'm done with that. I walk around. I walk around to the Dairy Queen. I get myself a nice medium chocolate ice cream. Then I get on my bike and I go for a ride. Then I come home. I go to bed. I get up. I go to work. I do it all over again. But that's because those are the choices I give myself for things that I like to do. I don't want anybody telling me what.
I want to give you a choice also. And I want to give the rest of the nation a choice. As we bring forth the Ride for Change, Ride for Hope in cities around the country, I want to engage folks of all demographics, black, white, Chinese, you name it, from all different types of motorcycle clubs and associations and independent riders. I think there's about 12 or 13 of them in total. Engaging on an issue that we think is significant to the community, once again, and that's the educational crisis here in the United States. We feel as the bottom comes up, we all come up. And as we start reconciling some of our situations from the bottom, we can reconcile our situations on par and at the top from the legislative level as well. And that's
what I'm going to offer to you.
It's about how we're dealing with each other. And
right.
To give us an opportunity to work together with each other.
Right.
On more issues.
About a mile and a half out my front door is the back gate of Camp Pendleton. It's 227 square miles of Marine Corps base. At any given time, there's 30 to 35,000 Marines, sailors, some Army guys, people that ride, people that are civilian employees that work on the base. But they said that there's 32,000 registered motorcycles on Camp Pendleton.
32
Bill and I, my partner that does the show with me, have tapped into a few of the clubs out there, and we're trying to tap into them all, but it's spreading a little bit at a time. But I'm offering you, send me your press release, I'll turn it over to the right people, and we'll see what happens. And what I'll do
now,
is I'll tell them.
I just attempted to do that. Sam, Tom, Robert, Orange, Karen, Robert, Zebra.
It's Strokers with a K. It's Stroker with a K, or a Z, rather. It's S-T-R-O. It's STROKERZ383@gmail.com.
Okay, we were missing the E. That's what it is. Got it. I tell you, man, that's what happens when you get old. Get older.
But yeah, we've been trying to tap into that for years, man, out there. But everybody's got their own agendas, you know. If he's been working all week and he gets a Friday Liberty Pass and he don't have to be big till Sunday, he's gonna do what I used to do: get on the bike and go for a ride somewhere. When I go for a ride now, all I take is a toothbrush, toothpaste, a change of socks, maybe a change of skivvies, a T-shirt, deodorant, and the rest I buy wherever I'm at. Other than that, I don't carry anything but that. Because that's the choice I make.
Okay, good.
But yeah, if you send me your...
I just left it back off to you.
Okay. Yeah, if you send it to me, I'll post it for you tonight. It'll be up in
tomorrow.
Yeah, it'll be on tomorrow's page.
Outstanding.
Okay.
I'm also sending you an invitation to the World of Soul motorcycle community also.
Okay. That's what we've been trying to do, man. You know, I belong to a group called Bikers of a Lesser Tolerance, short BOLT. And we're spread out throughout the country. And there's a lady that's in North Carolina that's been talking about trying to tap all kinds of clubs, Asian clubs, the black clubs, the white clubs, the Mexican clubs, the social misfits, whoever. If we can get everybody together, then we got a voice.
Is that priestess you're referring to?
Yes.
She joined our network 3 days ago.
Okay. Yeah, that's Jan out of North Carolina.
Yeah. We may be on the same page then.
We are on the same page, brother.
Yeah, we've been working on this thing for 3 years, and we've had some congressional support, and we've got some commercial support as well. It's that support on the ground level that we're really looking to increase our base. So having the opportunity to share the dialogue with you today regarding Life for Change, Life for Hope, and World of Soul, Motorcycle Community really makes the difference. And coming into contact with Tiger Lily and most recently now Janice is really helping to put all the pieces in place. So hopefully we can put together a good programmatic solution to some of the issues that we are facing in order to see the reality in which we'd like to end up at.
Exactly. I mean, like, you guys are going to be there in August, right?
That's correct.
You're going to be in Vegas in August. Have you notified any of the media outlets?
Yes, indeed. In fact, our promotional photo was on the billboard there, the PR Newswire billboard at the fashion show outlet on the strip. And they were published in several of the local newspapers. PR Newswire.
Have you sent an email to Brenda Fox at womenmotorcyclist.com?
I will now.
Okay. It's womenmotorcyclist.com. It's Brenda Fox. Just tell her that Philip told you to get in touch with her.
Now, once again, that's Brenda Fox at
womenmotorcyclist.com.
Got it.
There's another guy. Once I get your email, I got it now. I'm gonna email a guy and I'm gonna give him your phone number. They have another. There's a little network of us doing shows. I'm on Tuesdays and Thursdays. The Biker Lowdown out of New York is on tomorrow night, along with Hermes. So it's thebikerlowdown.com, and the guy you want to talk to is Hank McGrath. The other guy, Hermes, his name is Hermes Yanis, but it's at hermeslive.com also. Tiger Lily and I, we're all regulars on each other's shows, and Tiger Lily can give you a little more info on Hermes.
Okay, great. Great. Well, I'm going to be looking to you guys for some direction. I'm new to this, but I'm not new to trying to put all the pieces together. But the biking community has created an ample opportunity to make a tremendous difference where a difference is welcomed. And I'm glad that we have been able to make a dent in the community and folks have reached back in return with the efforts that we've been putting out there. So it's a good piece. We're looking forward to moving forward.
Absolutely. And I'll extend you. You can call Thursday at the same between 6 and 8, which would be 8 and 10 your time there. And my partner Bill will be here Thursday, and he might have some questions for you. I'll fill him in. And he's a really cool guy. You can check him out at kennedycycles.com. We've been friends for over 20 years.
KennedyCycles.com.
Yes. KennedyCycles.com. If you have trouble with that, just shoot me an email and I'll send you a direct link.
Okay.
But if you go on my blog and you go in the friends column on the right-hand side of the page, any of those links that you click on will take you directly to those people.
Now, wait a minute. I never got to your website. Give me your website address.
I'll send you the flyer right now.
Okay, super.
At Invitations?
Excuse me?
I said, the one you sent me from, it says Invitations, World of Soul?
Yeah, you can't reply to that. I did send you one from T. Hardy at worldofsoulmc.com. Should say Life for Change, Life for Hope press release has a tough subject.
Yeah, I got that.
Good. That's the one to reply to.
Okay, so you want me to... All right. If you could send me one with your email address, it'll be easier. It won't go to your spam then. And then, like I said, I'll open it up to you if you want to call in Thursday at the same time. Just shoot me an email that you're going to be there with the number you're going to call from. And when I see it in the chat room, I'll bring you in. Or in the switchboard, I'll bring you in.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Well, I definitely appreciate being on this evening.
Okay. No problem. The chair is yours anytime you call, man.
Sounds like a winner.
That's what we're here for.
Sir.
All right. Take care.
Thank you, man. Have a good night. Yep.
All right. Bye-bye. Hello, RJ.
What's up, man?
How you doing, buddy?
Doing good. Just been busy.
Yeah. I put the press release you sent me. It's on the blog.
Oh, awesome.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we're really pushing that right now, trying to get as many endorsements and, you know, sponsors to come in and raise as much capital as possible for this jump.
Okay. And then what I did was I put it up there it'll come out at midnight tonight.
Awesome. Thank you.
And as of right now, the blog today has, let me see, I got to get to it. I tell you, when Bill's not here, I'm trying to work with, my hands are like all thumbs, dude. Yeah. Right now, we're at 29,257.
Hits for the day?
Hits for the day, brother.
That's cool.
Hits for the day.
So what's new with you, man? How you been?
I've been good, man. I was up at Rusty's Friday. I spent the day up there.
Oh, at the clubhouse?
No, at the shop.
Oh, I don't.
At the shop. When I left about, I think it was 10 to 5 or so.
Ah, okay.
Because I guess you had
some...
Huh?
He filled you in on everything that's going on with us?
Yeah, and I happened to meet that one lady that owns that blue bike.
Oh,
I guess she's waiting.
The record label lady.
There you go. I forgot her name, but yeah. How'd
Great
that work
lady.
Out?
We're still going back and forth with her, you know.
Okay.
We're just waiting and pretty much negotiating and seeing how everything's going to pan out when it comes to the money and, you know, what the expectations are. And there's just so many opportunities right now for the band. I mean, it all looks pretty, but, I mean, it's still very, very stressful and very tough for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely aging, man.
Yeah.
I'm starting to look like an old man.
Nah, you look like a little kid, dude. Wait till you get to be my age.
Dude, I'm reaching that age, man. I'm freaking stressed, and these record people are all crazy.
Yeah, it seems that, you know, it's like anything else, man. It goes with what's in it for me.
Yeah.
You know, what's my end at the bottom going to be, you know?
Yeah. So we're, you know, we got so many things going on. We have a new drummer now.
Uh-huh.
So Dan's gone. He decided he wanted to move on to other things, and he wasn't cut out for going on tour. So we picked up another, we met another guy that actually was a tour manager for the band Il Nino about 3 or 4 months ago. Now he's our drummer. So.
Uh-huh.
He played for a band called Walls of Jericho, so he's pretty pro. So we're kind of blessed to have him as well.
Cool. So, just so everybody knows, what we're talking about is Atticus 7. This happens to be RJ. He's their manager.
Their slave.
Sometimes you got to make choices, brother. If you want to get to that ring at the end, you know what you got to do.
Yep, I got to sell all my shit until I start making money.
Well, no, you know,
man, what's that?
It's like anything else, man. It's the effort you put into it, that's where you get it from, you know? You might have to, it's like now, I sweat for a good, I'm still a pipe welder. I still dabble now and then to keep my certs up. But I paid my dues to be where I'm at, you know?
And yeah,
just,
you
that's
you're
all
doing
it
pretty
is.
Well.
You just got to pay your dues.
Yep. Some people, they do it in a year. Some people, they do it in 10 years. It just depends
exactly.
on where you're at.
Exactly. Now, the other thing I want to tell you is there's another, I'll send you the link, but there's another one. On, it goes out on the internet also, but it's called Biker Bits. And I sent her the press release yesterday, and it went out today.
Awesome.
Yeah, so I'll send you a copy of that.
Please, that'd be great.
Yeah. And then, like I said, whatever you want to do, send it to me, man. I asked Rusty about, I put that thing up with the gears and stuff to make a 5-speed like a 6-speed.
Oh, yeah.
And I've been running that one back and forth on the blog. So what I did the other day was I talked to him about it, and what we decided to do was if anybody goes on there and clicks the link, that they need to tell them where they saw it. So once we can start keeping track of it then, because it's going out worldwide. So he's getting some calls, he said, but he's not tracking, you know what I mean, because nobody's saying where they saw it.
Right, right. Yeah, you know, we're just doing all kinds of stuff here to survive.
Yeah.
But that's the band life, man. That's rock. That's the life of a rock star, dude, until you actually get to that level, man. It's all about enjoying the ride, struggling, hating, loving, bleeding, sweating,
right.
crying. All the fucking the aboves, man. But,
yeah,
you know, we got a lot of cool shit going on with the band. We just need it to go further.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of cool stuff going on.
So what I'm gonna do is I'll send you that right now. It's gonna come like it's addressed to me, but you'll be able to go to it. Okay?
Sounds good. Sounds wonderful. Sorry I haven't been calling in weekly, man. Just been busy.
Yeah, so you wanna give people so they know what we're talking about with this press release. Go for it.
Okay, so yeah, we're doing Surge's Bike Week. We're doing a jump there with Illusion Motorsports, and Rusty Coons and T-Rod, the owners of Illusion, are building the bike for world-renowned daredevil Trigger Gum. He was pretty much the daredevil that was handed down the torch of terror from Evel Knievel. It passed over his son, Robbie, and went straight to Trigger. So Trigger is going to be beating the world record on a Harley-Davidson. And we'll be jumping 9 days in Sturgis. And so we are raising funds to pay for everything.
Uh-huh.
And it'll go
okay,
to the book world record. So we're pretty much doing the sponsorship for people. I mean, just the usual stuff you do for a show, you know. The sponsorship packages, people get their stuff on the ramp, the logo, the dirt, you know, the takeoff, the landing, the helmet, the everything, you know, whatever they pay for. And then it, obviously it'll be on, like, fuel, fuse. Fox.
Uh-huh.
It'll be on a few reality shows. Will be there filming. It'll be in the Guinness Book of World Records. So there's a lot of perks for whoever advertises.
Mhm. That's good, man. That's good. I'm glad. I'm happy for you guys. Any? What happened with the tour? Is that in limbo now or?
Yeah, we're pretty much going to focus on going into the studio and retracking the album. So we're going to retrack the drums and with our new drummer, and he's going to make everything better. We're going to redo some of the songs and then re-release the EP, and then we're going to start recording all new stuff. So we'll be ready by fall to release and hopefully tour. Hopefully get invited to tour on Uproar for the whole time.
So. Well, how about if I give the audience a taste of Attica?
That'd be great.
Okay. This one's by Attica 7. It's called War. Caller from 447. Are you there?
Where's 447?
Not off the top of my head. That's why I unmuted them. I don't know if they want to talk or just listen.
Ah.
The caller from 447?
Hello?
Hello?
Yo,
Lee, is that you?
Here it is.
Hey, this one's calling from the pond, man. From across the pond in England.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm using a different phone.
Oh, okay. Evil E, this is RJ. He manages my friend Rusty's band, Attica 7. Actually, we're all friends.
Yeah.
Hi.
Hi, how you doing? I'm just dealing with a couple of things. So, yeah.
Awesome.
So what's up, Evil E?
Yeah, not too bad. How's yourself?
Not bad. Just fired up a doobie.
Oh, okay.
Are you allowed to doobie and talk?
Sure. When you guys want to puff, puff, pass, we have problems.
Oh, jeez. Awesome.
What's going on in England, Evil? You got anything you want to share?
The weather's pretty nice here, and this weekend's gonna be pretty cool.
It's
quiet,
supposed to be getting over 100 over here somewhere.
Yeah.
Uh huh.
There's a national party on this Friday.
I don't know about that one. Yeah, national party. Go for that one.
Yeah, a national party because there's a royal marriage. So, I mean, I'm not too worried about that. It's just the liquor I'm interested in. But I think Bank Holiday Monday there'll be a lot of bike things going down on the seafront. There'll be a lot of bikers on the seafront.
Uh huh.
So I would like to have got down there this Monday, but couldn't do it because I had to go and see my cousin. But this Monday's meant to be pretty cool.
When you heading off to Jamaica?
Well, I don't know yet, because I might have to go somewhere else before then.
Oh, okay. When's the last time you were in Brazil?
2009.
Okay, nothing's changed. If it was 20 years, then there'll be a lot of change.
Brazil, yeah, it'll always be the same. You can probably.
Got any, hey, RJ, you got any questions for Evil?
No, I'm just listening right now.
Man, I came in a bit late. I should have called in a bit earlier to get more into the groove of things.
Huh?
So.
Well, no, just three guys kicking it right now, man. So anything that you got a burning desire about anything, go for it, man.
Yeah, I have a video to send you. It's about some new. Canada and the year. You know, we were talking about the biker laws in Canada.
Right.
Could be coming out. I've got a documentary I'd like to send you on YouTube. Now, sometimes the goddamn thing plays and other days it doesn't. So
right.
I'm going to send it over to you and hopefully it'll play and you'll be able to watch it and, or just download it and watch it if it doesn't work because YouTube's having a lot of problems right about now. You can watch that, and it'll be certainly something for a top hat. Because there were some pretty worrying statements made in that, about they want to go around and stop bikers from wearing the colours and that. And bikers.
Oh, they've been trying to do that for a while. Yeah, they've been trying to do that for a while. They tried to do it down here in town, but it didn't work out for them.
A load of shit, So... Yeah, why don't they stop people wearing suits? You know what I mean? Why don't they stop wearing
exactly.
suits? Because the La Nota Costa wear suits.
Oh, the last few years, a lot of people wearing suits are the biggest crooks in the country.
Yeah.
You mean the lawyers living off of criminal money? Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. So did you hear about what Attica's going to do over the, or actually what Rusty and T-Rod are going to do at the shop? They're going to build a jump bike. I'll let you take it from there, RJ. Maybe you want to explain it to them.
We're going to be attempting to beat the world record long distance jump on a Harley Davidson, which is like over, I think, 230 or 240 feet at Sturgis. So we're building the bike, getting it ready.
I couldn't imagine too many Harleys being able to jump, because they're not exactly sports bikes. Maybe a Harley Davidson Sportster, yeah, but they just seem too goddamn. It's about a land safety on one of those.
It's rebuilt for the jump, but I mean, it's still, you know, as far as the record books go, it has to pretty much be a Harley, you know?
Yeah.
This guy, from what I understand, this guy took over where Evel Knievel left off, correct?
Yeah, he's pretty crazy. He's done a lot of crazy shit. He holds 5 world titles right now, or, you know, records right now.
How could you modify it? How far do you reckon a regular Sportster could jump?
You have to use a different, you can only use the Sportster engine and the Sportster rear. You'd have to actually use like a 450, or I think it was a Kawasaki front with different shocks on the rear.
Which those guys are going to fabricate at the shop, correct?
Yeah, everything's being made over there. It'll be quite interesting. Seth Enslow did it in Australia. Another rider named Seth Enslow holds the record, and he just got that last year in Australia.
Yeah, that's the guy who got off the bike and put the ice bag in his nuts while he was getting interviewed.
Yes. But, you know, they have, you can do anything these days. I mean, you got a kid that's flipping Harleys now, too.
Right. Well, I see that once a weekend when some yahoo down here has too many beers and tries to flip his dyno.
Ha, ha, ha,
ha. Then they wonder why they're getting arrested.
Yeah, we don't like jail.
It's like this, man. You can stand where this bar is. You can stand in front of the bar. And picture this, kitty corner from the bar, the parking lot is 5 cars. All the guys are standing out in front of their cars, they're all kibitzing or whatever. And a guy could blow the stop sign, 2 rice burners will drive by, 1 guy will pull a wheelie, nobody moves. Somebody moves from that bar, they jump in the car and run that guy down.
Wow.
Because he's on a Harley and he's wearing a color.
Really?
Yes, sir. Happens to me every time I go down there. And you've seen me, and you know what I wear. And every time I sport something like that downtown, I sport that shit every day. And every time I go down there, I get the same fucking yahoos trying to do the same shit, and I challenge them every time.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why they tried one.
I don't know if you know about the California Step Back, but they tried one. They tried to nail us with that one, too.
No, I didn't know anything about that.
Well, it's guilt by association. In other words, if you, me, and Rusty were standing on the corner, and we all had a certain color on, we're now a criminal organization, and we're all guilty. And anybody that knows us or walks up at that point is guilty too, because some cop got a wild hair up his ass and saw us standing together and decided to write a little week.
Oh wow.
Yep.
Thank God all the cops love Rusty.
Oh, yeah. You know why?
Because he's a peacekeeper.
And you know what else?
What else?
Uh, He's the most honest guy you'll ever meet in your life, man. He's a stand-up guy. I'm the same way. I won't tell you something that I can't do, and I won't do nothing that I can't get done.
I feel you, man. I feel you.
That's why And Thursday, don't forget to call in Thursday. We'll plug this again. Cause now, and then next Tuesday, you know Pete Avila, right?
Yeah.
He'll be on next Tuesday.
All right, cool.
Yeah, he'll be on about 7. And then if we can swing that guy whose movie we're going to all see. Are you going to that premiere on the 12th?
What is that? I don't even know what the hell it is.
It's that one for the movie the guy made. It's called I Ride.
I haven't heard about it yet.
All right, I'll get the email and I'll send it to you. But it's on. If you want to go, call me back and let me know, and I'll put you on my guest list.
Where's it at?
It's up in Hollywood on Thursday night the 12th. It's supposed to be at 8. It's supposed to be at one of the little theaters up there. It only holds like 600 people.
Is there free booze?
I have no idea, man. I mean, if there's free booze, you can have mine because I don't drink.
I sure do. alcohol is my friend.
All right, hey, we're down. We're down to the last 4 minutes. I want to thank you guys for calling in. I'm going to take us out with a song by Creed, and then what we'll do is actually I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do a different one. I want you guys, I'm going to tell you this. Somebody gave me a new nickname the other day. I think you guys are going to like this. Let me pull it up and then I'll pop it in. Yeah, I think you guys are going to like this, man. I'm going to let the song take us out and then just before we go off, I'll stop it and you can give me a little feedback. This is my new theme song. You guys heard a woman say 60 seconds, but yeah, that's my new theme song. Pete.
Yo.
Hey man, sorry I didn't get you in. I didn't see it.
I want to apologize to you. It's my fault. I had such a crazy day. I was helping a bunch of old people. I got on late, and that's been. I'll be on Thursday, nice and early,
okay.
9 p.m.
Okay. All right, I'll talk to you then because we're down to take us out with the rest of this song. All right, good night, everybody.
Thanks. Good night.
Good night.
All right, good night, everybody.
Peace.
Good night.
Evil E.
Yeah, good night.
Call me, Evil E. Call me.